The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
No matter where you come down in the climate change talks and arguments these days, one thing's pretty sure. State of Oregon is very much, you know, going forward here. It's pretty much about zero emissions. And the one thing I think we're finding out that Democrats and Republicans are all agreeing on that, boy, if we can make some money out of this, that's not so bad for the community, right?
I would say so.
Yeah. Yeah. Brad Fay joins me, and he, of course, is the director of content at Southern Oregon PBS. Remember when it used to be director of shows or something like that?
Right.
And now everything is content.
That's right.
What's it like being a content man here, Brad?
A lot of responsibility.
I imagine so. Hey, well, I appreciate you being on here, and I want to bring on people that are connected with the other side of the hill. This is a documentary. It's going on tonight, 8 o'clock, right?
That's correct.
On Southern Oregon PBS, and available, you know, everywhere here in Southwest Oregon for sure. And first off, let's bring on James Parker. Hello, James. James, good to have you on. Welcome.
Hey, Bill. Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, you're the producer of this Other Side of the Hill documentary, right?
That's right.
Okay. And we also have Nick Johnson, who is the executive director of the Lake County Resources Initiative. How are you doing, Nick?
Doing well. Thanks for having me here today.
Okay, great. And we're going to have Brad kind of set the table here first, and just give us a little bit on what this PBS documentary is.
Well, we were offered this independent documentary to air, and it covers the eastern side of Oregon and the gold rush, as you call it, that's going on over there with renewable energy. And they've asked us to air it here so that they could expose western Oregon or southwest Oregon to what's going on over there. And it basically covers, you know, wind, solar, geothermal, and all the things that are happening in eastern Oregon that are becoming quite lucrative. And if I can just cite one example.
Sure.
So Sherman County, which is up near Mount Hood, on the other side of Mount Hood from Portland, was the poorest county in Oregon, and now they're the richest. And they're making so much money with wind that they've been able to build a new library, a community senior center, a new school. They have improved their roads, and any kid that wants a scholarship can have one to college.
So is this coming from the spill-off from the renewable energy push there?
Yeah, because the way that they brought in, and I think James can probably elaborate a little bit more on how it happened.
But yeah, James, why don't you break that down, since Brad just mentioned it. Why don't you dive in on that? What happened?
Yeah, so we, in terms of making the film, we set out on a quest to go to rural eastern Oregon and just ask questions. You know, we really wanted to be intentional about not having an agenda. We wanted to just ask the folks, you know, in these communities how they felt about changing landscapes, if they were noticing changes, and what they were doing about it. And so, as Brad, you know, mentions, one of the most compelling examples we found was in Sherman County. We met Judge Thompson there, and he shared the story of how, I think it was in the early 2000s, you know, they had the opportunity to start developing some wind projects there, and you know, they dove in because of the economics, and it ended up being really, really attractive to a lot of the landowners, and so they went from one of the poorest counties in the state to one of the richest, I think, in a matter of a couple of years.
Are you talking about like per capita, just because of the economic impact of these projects?
Exactly. Yep.
Interesting. Interesting. And now, Nick, you're the executive director of Lake County Resources Initiative. So are you bringing these kind of projects into Lake County also?
Yeah. So just to clarify, I was the executive director of Lake County Resources Initiative during the time the film was made. I have actually moved on to a different profession now, but I was just wanted to share that for clarification. But yeah, during the time I was heavily involved with helping facilitate developers to site projects in the county and promote responsible land use and just help grease the gears, so to speak, in terms of getting these projects built and put on the ground in Lake County.
All right. And Lake County, give us a few cities. So if people don't know where Lake County is, what part of eastern Oregon is that?
Yeah, we're about 2 hours east of Klamath Falls. Really the only sizable town is Lakeview, and it has a population of about 8,000.
Yep, love it. It's a beautiful area there. But you're right, economic activity has not been the strongest out there. There's a lot of farming, a lot of cattle work and things like that. And so what kind of project got brought in there? Because I remember hearing a while ago that there was going to be talk about geothermal in eastern Oregon, and then it kind of disappeared. Or is this still happening right now?
To some degree, there's still interest in geothermal. Really, the biggest use for it at this time is for heating of the hospital, a couple of buildings owned by the school district, mm-hmm. as well as the prison here in Lake County. So they actually use that geothermal heat to heat those buildings for free.
Okay, all right. So what do you have as far as renewable energy there right now as part of all of this?
Yeah, so the solar projects really account for the majority of renewable energy here. There's a high solar resource value in the county, and there's a lot of land here to develop these projects. And the projects, you know, have to be sited appropriately, but really that solar development accounts for the majority of renewable energy in the county. And I believe Lake County is the leading county in the state in terms of solar energy generation.
What has been the financial impact? Because Lake County was a poor county, too.
Yeah, and it was poor. You know, part of the reason is because of the downturn of the timber industry in the late 80s and 90s.
Right.
And a lot of this solar has really helped replace some of that tax revenue to the county that was lost during the downturn of the timber industry. So it's really been a way to backfill that hole that was left in the economy. And, you know, there's millions upon millions of dollars that have come in terms of tax revenue to the county.
All right.
And helping individual folks with their job training and gaining skills and getting employed as well.
All right, Nick, I appreciate hearing the impact there. And James, is this a common story that you're finding out in these poor or maybe formerly poor eastern Oregon counties?
Yeah, I mean, certainly in our experience making the film, we found a lot of these stories. I mean, we focused in the film on Sherman County, on Wallowa County, and Lake County. It didn't make it in the film, but we also spent some time in John Day. And, you know, there definitely was an excitement about these economic opportunities. To use a phrase that Nick kind of taught us, the triple bottom line solutions were the ones that really seemed to be successful. And so those are projects that are beneficial to the local economy, they're improving quality of life, and they're beneficial to the local ecology. And so, you know, it was really important to find these local leaders, to platform these local leaders.
Yeah.
And we did it all in the context of you know, this urban-rural divide, which isn't, you know, it's been around for a long time, and there's a lot of reasons why there's this distrust, but we really felt, we were hearing over and over again and you know, feel it's important that rural voices and the wisdom, the rich, you know, wealth of wisdom in rural communities is included in these discussions around, you know, how we mitigate climate.
I'm going to ask all three of you, maybe, I don't know who wants to weigh in on this, but has there been any pushback from people that are saying, hey, is it really a good idea to start committing lots and lots of farmland that would grow food into growing power instead? Anything like that happen? You know?
I'll start with that.
Okay, go ahead, Brad.
I'll let the other two talk about the pushback, but I'll tell you, when you're taking $300 a year in revenue on an acre of land and turning it into $5,000 a year.
Oh boy, that's
you're not going to get much pushback.
Yeah, that speaks loudly.
Yes.
Well, I guess maybe not necessarily with the property owners, right? But I'm thinking about how one of the whole points of having state land use control in this state was to preserve farmland, right? And so I'm just wondering if people would bring that up,
James.
Yeah, you know, I think Nick's probably best suited to answer that, but I think we don't want to like generalize, you know, that like everyone we spoke to was super in favor of these solutions. It's certainly not the case,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's when you can find these projects that seem to be win-win-win. You know, that's when then you get that support.
All right, I want to direct this question here to Nick. Is it, were different companies involved in this, or is this something in which Pacific Power directly was doing that? And who owns the projects? And the reason I'm asking about this, especially with wind projects, is that we're starting to get a lot of reports now that windmills are wearing out faster than they originally thought, and we're seeing visions of millions of blades piling up in landfills, and this is one of the criticisms of the industry. Same with solar, actually, too, about what to do when these things get older. Are the communities involved on the hook for the cleanup, or are there ways to ensure that
if things go wrong or something needs to be replaced or if a company goes bankrupt, that it's still taken care of. I remember seeing down in Southern California just a few years ago that there were windmills broken, and you'd see the goo leaking out of them because the company went up. You know, so any thoughts on that? I don't know who wants to take that. Just curious.
Yeah. So to answer your first question about, you know, the utilities being involved, really they're not in these processes, in these development processes. Mm-hmm. They may come in later on down the line, but I was never interacting directly with utilities like Pacific Power or any other investor-owned utilities. And to your second question about who's on the hook for cleanup and restoration or recycling or whatever the end of the life of the project may be, developers are usually bonded when it comes to the cleanup of these projects. So the community is definitely not on the hook for that. And there's also often, you know, contractual requirements for land remediation. If, for example, where a solar project is sited, there needs to be some remediation measures to bring that land back into good health and into good shape at the end of the project life.
Yeah, that's good because, you know, I could think about, you can go into something with the best of intentions, but, hey, real life can sometimes get in the way of something like this. Hey, the company goes down. Now what? All right, we got a bunch of windmills falling apart. Now I'm talking about 10, 15, 20 years down the road. We may not even see the problems there for a while, but we're talking about looking at past development. So what are we going to learn tonight in this documentary? What do you think is going to be our big takeaway that will make us want to really check this out on Southern Oregon PBS? What do you think?
Well, I'll let James go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead, James.
Yeah. You know, I hope that the takeaway is that, you know, by seeing these examples of incredible leadership in rural Eastern Oregon and some of the outcomes of collaboration, It's a reminder of how powerful that can be. You know, when we listen to each other, when we come to a table, even if we have differing viewpoints, we live in different places, perhaps we have different values about certain topics. Like when we can align on a shared vision of a future, you know, that's kind of where to start. And then you work backwards into how specifically we can get things done. But I think there's a ton of opportunity on this issue of climate and renewable energy and, you know, rural communities like economic health and resilience. There's a ton of opportunity for us to do a better job at collaborating and, you know, and encouraging folks in the urban population centers to reach out, you know, to learn more about what's happening in rural Oregon and to really come to the table with a mutual respect for the folks who are doing amazing work out there.
Are there any focuses on bringing these large-scale projects closer to these urban areas so there's less power line having to, you know, pipe a lot of power lines to places in remote areas? Or are these the best places to do it? I don't know who can weigh in on that, but at least ask.
Yeah, I'll take that. I think it's a community-by-community issue. I think it's dependent on what communities want, where they want to see projects built, and how they want to see them built. I don't think that there's one blanket answer to answer, you know, that question specifically. It's a community by community issue.
But I would imagine that the land is pretty cheap out in Eastern Oregon right now. That must be a big driver of this. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, that's certainly fair, but there are a lot of other factors as well that affect project cost. Like you mentioned, distance to interconnection, and then transmission capacity as well. Those are both big factors. So beyond just cheap land, there are a lot of other factors to consider as well.
All right, very good. James, Nick, really appreciate you both coming on, talking more about this. Brad, I appreciate you coming in from Southern Oregon PBS, too.
Sure.
So tonight, this big documentary, The Other Side of the Hill. Other Side of the Hill is at 8 o'clock. And will it be replayed anytime in the near future?
There's some repeats. I can't quote it right now. And, of course, it'll be online.
Okay.
And you can go to our website and view it anytime.
What is your website address, just for those that may not know?
Yeah, it's sopbs.org.
Pretty darn easy. And
yeah.
I appreciate you coming in and talking a bit about this, because I got to tell you, when you have these very, very poor counties, or at least it sounds like many of them are formerly poor, and if they're getting in much better shape, yeah, that could be a win-win for all involved.
Can't argue with that.
And, of course, it makes me wonder if maybe some of them won't want to join Greater Idaho. I know there's a lot of talk that some of them have already voted for that, but that's a political question for another time.
That's another day.
All right, very good. Other Side of the Hill, tonight, 8 o'clock, Southern Oregon PBS. It is 822 KMED, KCMD. This is Bill Meyer. Josephine County Republicans are sponsoring an all-day Patriots Conference this Saturday at the Joe County Fairgrounds from 10 to 6. Local leaders, endorsed candidates, 21 outstanding speakers will be there. Buy your tickets now at the Republican headquarters across from the courthouse in Grants Pass or online at jocogop.org. For more information about this Saturday's all-day Patriots Conference, including a schedule of speakers, drop by the headquarters or go to jocogop.org. Again, that's jocogop.org.
American Wrencher Garage is your premier auto care provider, serving Medford, Central Point, and the Rogue Valley, providing nothing less than the highest quality standard of professionalism on every single service and repair. Call today. Appointments are available for oil change to engine change. Get the peace of mind you deserve at American Wrencher Garage on Biddle, across from Elmer's, 499-6673, 499-6673. American Wrencher Garage. We stand behind every job we do, with service you can trust.
I'm going to start commenting from time to time about the abuses of big tech and how some ought to be illegal, like trying to opt out of Facebook. Here's why, just like the Eagles say about the Hotel California, with Facebook, you can check in, but you can never leave. I'm Kim Commando for ExpressVPN. It creates a secure encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. Get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/Kim. Let's say you've outgrown Facebook or Instagram capturing all your photos, posts, and more to train its AI and who knows what else. Then you must begin at a needlessly complicated webpage called the Facebook Help Center. This is where Facebook says to begin to cut the Facebook cord to tell them that you want out and want all your data erased too. After you've wasted time that you will never get back, Meta will then tell you that they have your submission, but it cannot guarantee that all your data will be deleted. There ought to be a law, right? Keep your tech know-how going right now and join over 500,000 people who get my free newsletter at getkim.com.
Using the internet without a VPN is like not paying attention to the safety demonstration on a flight. What if one day that yellow mask drops down from overhead and you don't know what to do? It's better to be safe than sorry. That's why I never go online without ExpressVPN. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network, your data is not secured. Anyone on the same network could potentially gain access to and steal your personal data. I'm talking about passwords, financial details, just about everything you do online. And that data is super valuable. Hackers are making thousands selling personal info on the dark web. But with ExpressVPN, you're protected by a secure encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. And ExpressVPN works on all your devices, phones, laptops, tablets, and more, so you can stay secure on the go. Head over to expressvpn.com/Kim, and you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. That's expressvpn.com/Kim to get those three extra free months. expressvpn.com/
The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMET and 99.3 KCMD.
Okay, this is a dangerous time. Conspiracy Theory Thursday, open phones. But it's 826 770-5633, 770-KMD. I found that really interesting, what's going on in Eastern Oregon with these renewable energy plans. And I know that we don't have time to necessarily get into the economics of it. It seems to have certainly found some eager takers, especially with many of the farmers who have found themselves probably hard-pressed and maybe not getting their water that they may have been able to grow crops before. Could be interesting. I'm going to have to check that out tonight. 8 o'clock is when that's on. Wild Salmon Steve is here, and probably not any wild salmon migrating to Eastern Oregon, but what are you thinking this morning about that? Go ahead.
Okay, Bill. It's kind of difficult because numbers are involved.
But right.
The average amount of solar power generated from a solar facility in Oregon is about 5 hours a day.
That's about how long a day it actually generates power overall,
yes,
right?
On average, winter it might be 2 or 3 hours or none. Summer it might be 7 or 8 hours, mm-hmm. but it averages 5 hours a day. So the legislature has, and I can't state the number of the, or, you know, what the legislative bill was, but we have to take wind and solar before we take power from thermal plants.
Right. So yeah. In other words, when it's there, it gets paid for and used first. In essence,
yeah,
that's what it does.
And the thermal plant's power is 3-4 cents a kilowatt. The wind and solar nameplate is maybe 14 cents. But, okay, back to the 5 hours a day thing. So if we're going to replace thermal plants that run all the time with solar, and solar only works 5 hours a day, in order to make it work, now this is according to that study I keep talking about by E3 Engineering.
This is the one that was through. This was the one that was for Northwest Power Council, wasn't it? If I recall.
Yes, you have to have five times the amount of solar to equal one. You know, one say 1 gigawatt of thermal plant. You need 5 gigawatts of solar. But the flaw in that, there's two flaws. One is we don't have a way to store the energy, so when it's dark, you don't get anything.
So, and you also have to have something to back it up 100%. See, this is the real challenge, and I know that you know, these farmers, these people that are sucking wind economically, I don't blame them for being open to something like this.
Subsidized stuff.
Yeah.
But okay, so who's going to pay them when when that power can't go into the grid?
Well, we pay them is what happens. The ratepayers
pay
them.
Yes. So our power is going to go up at least by a power of five, mm-hmm. and maybe more than that. Plus, the other side of that is the more solar there is, the less economical it is to have thermal plants because they don't respond very well to changes in demand. Those plants are designed to run wide open all the time.
Well, you have to go to more quick-to-spin-up plants like natural gas plants. But the state of Oregon hates those, too. They hate them.
They hate those, too. And mm-hmm. so anyway, this whole thing is a farce. And kind of the end of this story is if you want to have some sort of way to know what's going on, come to the CARE ham radio classes that are happening this Saturday at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
It's an ongoing process. It's going to be at Star Body Works at 1024 Summit Avenue in Medford. And, you know, we've already had one class. It's basically just a get started thing. But if people are interested, the likelihood, the more they push these solar plants and the more wind that they put online, the less likely we are to have reliable electricity.
Well, that is a fact. And
yes.
And like I said, and I'm not talking about the goodness of what's going on with Lake County and people who had unproductive land. They're getting something for it now. Hey, that's great. Except you're right, though. It is well known the higher we get with renewable energy, you have to have 100% backup for everything renewable because renewable will come and go with the wind stops or the sun goes out or the cloud comes or the snow or the snow's on the solar power. There's all sorts of reasons to this. All you have to do is talk with Senator Linthicum, who lives out in eastern Klamath County, and you know he went renewable because he had to. You know, at that point, it would cost just a huge amount of money to run power lines to where he is, but you have to modify your life quite a bit. And I'm wondering if ultimately we're going to have to do that ourselves if state policy doesn't get solved at all, because you know they'll just say, all right, you'll have power in the day when the sun's up, and then maybe you won't at night. Or in the early evening.
Bill, my mm-hmm. final comment on this is the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
And boy, we're paving it day after day, aren't we, in Oregon?
Yes, we are.
Lots of good intentions. Bill. Hey, Francine's here. Here, Francine, you had a question about that. Go ahead.
Well, actually, I had a few questions, but to be honest, Steve answered most of them and a lot more eloquently than I could have even asked them.
Well, I'm glad you were here anyway. Thanks for the call, okay?
But wait. Oh. Don't hang up on me. I actually did want to mention one thing. You know, the comments that these people made about how these windmills on the property as opposed to food production is actually more profitable for the farmers.
Yeah.
Well, I want to know how the heck is it more profitable to have, you know, partial wind power than providing food? Is this a subsidy thing that's supporting these people that makes them think this is more profitable?
Well, they're just, you know, to grow a potato on the field just doesn't pay nearly as much as having a multi-million dollar windmill on that same
right,
plot of land.
How are they making the money from these windmills that only produce electricity?
You know? Well, they get a cut from it one way or the other. You know, they're allowing them the lease on the land And I don't know if it depends on how the contracts. Maybe they get a cut of the power. I don't know. And you know, and another thing I could say, maybe they have a situation where you have the windmill on your farm, but you also get your free power taken care of for your other needs. Who knows? Could be a lot of things there.
Okay, so this to me sounds, you know, energy in place of food production sounds very New World Order-ish to me. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, so I had to get that in.
That's okay. It's all right.
And then I want to know why we are not more invested in geothermal. Is it because it makes sense, like water energy, you know, water power? I mean...
Well, I think one of the challenges with geothermal is the... from what I've read, I'm not an expert on this, so I'm just spitballing. And maybe somebody can correct me, but there is a corrosive nature to the, to the water which is brought up out of the earth there, and pretty expensive. They're expensive operations, you know, in many cases, and of limited impact. But we'll see. I appreciate your call. Thank you for that. Let me go to it, and we go to line two. Good morning. Hi, who's this? Welcome.
Hey, Bill. It's your friend Brad. Good morning to you.
Hey, Brad. What's up?
What a powerful discussion. You know, oddly enough, I had a conversation yesterday afternoon with two gentlemen in the power industry, each having about 30 years of experience. And the topic that you discussed on your show came up, and some interesting things for you to discuss later, check out whatever, is that the contractors that are actually building and developing the infrastructure, many of them are not inside the United States. That's one thing to look into. Another thing is that the increased cost of producing power in this manner is expected, not megawatt, but is expected to go up 500 to 600% over the next 10 years because it's not efficient. And the thing that's really, really interesting is, as near as we compared notes, is all of the power that's being produced by these so-called wind farms and solar farms out in eastern Oregon is all going where? It's all going to Portland. It's all going to Portland.
Now, you would these experts be willing to come on the show? I'd love to talk to them about it.
No, they can't. They can't. They're not in a position. But I do have an expert in the power industry that could come on your show. And you because of your technical background, you would have a wonderful discussion with this guy on how fragile our power infrastructure really is. This guy's a 43-year veteran of the power industry. And if everybody knew what he knew about our power system, they would be extremely concerned.
So chances are you're a 43-year veteran of the power industry talking about the fragility of the grid. He has, a 5,000-gallon buried diesel tank on his property and five generators, right?
Let me say one thing about my friend is that he took a look across the state that he was born in and realized that we're sailing into a power storm, and he moved out of state.
So
he doesn't live in Oregon anymore because he wants to live somewhere where his power is going to be assured.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll call you off air, and we'll get him on next week, okay? That'd be great.
And Bill, can I mention our Southern Oregon Home Show coming up May 3rd, 4th, and 5th?
Absolutely. 3rd, 4th, and 5th. That's going to be next Friday, Saturday, Sunday Expo.
Anything and everything for your home and property all in one place for 3 days at the beautiful Jackson County Expo.
Very good, Brad. We'll be in touch. Thanks again. 836 KMED, KCMD. We'll catch up on news. If you're on hold, we'll get right to you.
Voting is in progress for Bicoastal Media's Best of Southern Oregon contest, presented by Dusty's Transmissions. Go to bestofsouthernoregon.com and vote on over 1,000 businesses that were nominated in nearly 200 categories. You're able to vote for all your favorites once per day. So visit bestofsouthernoregon.com and help the best suppliers of goods and services win the gold and silver medals by voting every day through Wednesday, April 24th at 5 p.m. Good luck to all those nominated from Dusty's Transmissions and Bicoastal Media.
News is sponsored by Valley View Nursery, your only nursery with online pricing. Visit valleyviewnursery.com. They're closer than you think.
Good morning. I'm Natalie Cerna with your NBC5 Morning News Update. Two people are behind bars after an early morning burglary in Central Point Tuesday. The burglary took place at 8 a.m. in the 5700 block of Upton Road, but the suspects were tracked to another address in the 100 block of Laurelhurst Street, also in Central Point. After a search of the property, JCSO identified a woman and a man hiding under a shed, who eventually gave up after a lengthy standoff with pepper spray and a canine. During the search of the property, investigators discovered multiple firearms, illegal drugs, and $19,000 in cash. Then protesters of BLM's Poor Windy project are claiming a major victory after BLM decided to amend their plans to log an area of old-growth forest near Wolf Creek. The Poor Windy project has already included logging thousands of acres of land and has inspired protests from some community members. The protests have even included residents building a treehouse with a sign that reads, "No old-growth logging in a climate crisis." And Grants Pass Downs is officially announcing their summer season dates. Summer races kick off on June 15th and continue through the 30th. Grants Pass Downs will also be holding an Attaquin Derby Challenge on June 30th. The 12-day fall racing season opens September 8th. That's a look at your morning headlines. For NBC5 News, I'm Natalie Serna.
Gold and silver have been on quite the tear here recently, and if you're looking to maybe add a little bit to your portfolio, especially as central banks are adding gold, yep, they're buying gold hand over fist too. And it's been trading between 23.30 roughly, and the peak over the last week or two is like 24.50 for a short time, just like went boom. But it seems like the days of $1,700-$1,800 an ounce gold not happening right now. And do you think that maybe they have control over the finances of the United States and the Federal Reserve? If you do, maybe you don't want any physical gold or silver. But if you're thinking there could be an issue, talk to the recognized experts. Jay Austin and Company, gold and silver buyers. Ashland, 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland. 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass, one of my oldest sponsors. And gosh, they'll take care of you, the buying and the selling of gold. And if you have maybe some scrap gold and silver right now, banknotes that are collectible, so many other precious items, diamonds too, talk with them and free up some cash for whatever reason. Or if you just want to add to your King Midas holdings with physical gold and silver, which I think is a good idea to have some of it outside the banking system, do it with Jay Austin. Jay Austin. Go to jaustinbrokers.com, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass, 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland. Also, fortunereserve.com.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is brought to you by Johnson Builders, Southern Oregon's leading authority on post-frame and steel buildings for over 20 years.
It's amazing. What's right under your floor can impact your whole house. Musty smells, wall cracks, uneven floors, doors and windows that stick. These could all be your home sending you warning signs that there's a problem. But one simple call can be the answer to fixing everything under your home. For more than a decade, Terra Firma has been our area's number one solution for better basements, foundations, and crawl spaces. So why waste another day worrying? Make an investment in a more healthy, more valuable home. Call Terra Firma today.
Joel here with a mass story problem from Butler Ford and Truck Center. If Ford gives you a $5,000 rebate and Butler Ford matches it with a $5,000 discount and the government gives you a $7,500 tax credit, how fast will a Ford Lightning EV pickup that's saving you $17,500 go from 0 to 60? How about 4.2 seconds? And that's why I want you to test drive one this week. If after your Lightning test drive you decide you want to go with a good old-fashioned gas-powered F-150, not a problem. I've got them in stock with 1.9% financing for 72 months. And that Lightning test drive, 0 to 60 and 4.2, well, that can just be a really cool story you tell your buddies. Butler says yes to bigger discounts and rebates. Butler says yes to giving you more for your trade. Butler says yes to 1.9% financing for 72 months. Butler Ford and Truck Center, just 12 short minutes south of Medford, right off of exit 19, where we've got your truck, your SUV, certified pre-owned, hybrid, EV, and huge savings.
72 monthly payments of $14.71 per thousand financed on approved credit through Ford Credit. Offer expires 4/30/24.
106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD, and this is the Bill Myers Show.
I think it was Carrie who wrote me yesterday and saying, "Bill, who is this Patrick Green, Green guy who's running for district attorney, Jackson County?" Not much on his website about this, and don't worry about that. We're going to have him on the show tomorrow, because I'd like to find out more about this, who this Patrick Green guy is, too. All right, Carrie, appreciate your writing. By the way, the email, Bill at BillMyersShow.com. We're back to danger, stranger danger time. Open phones on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Gene's here. Go ahead, Gene. What's on your mind?
Well, I was just wondering, because I was checking into the small windmills, and they said 3,000 watts, but it didn't say per hour. It's based on 24 hours.
Oh, is that the average, right? Okay.
Well, yeah, it's they kind of claim that it puts out more than it does. You're getting ripped off by doing so, buying these.
Well, that's okay, because don't worry about it. If it may be 3,000 watts right now under the current sun, but when we have the aliens bring another sun into our solar system and put it out there, so maybe they're opposite each other, we may have 24/7 sunlight. You never know. And then we'll get more power.
The other sun is black, so it wouldn't work.
Okay. I know you're having fun with me, but I always appreciate that, Gene. Thanks. We go to line two. Hello, line two. You've been holding. Who's this? Go ahead.
Hey, it's Lucretia.
Lucretia. Oh, wait a minute. I should have known it was you. I should have been looking there. I wasn't ready. Go ahead. Got to have your theme. Okay. Otherwise, it's just not Conspiracy Theory Thursday.
Don't get me started about 24-hour sun that was in the past. But that's from Jason Bashir's. But I sent you something about Eric P. Dollard. He's like the Tesla of today. This man's amazing. He's the only one that's replicated Tesla's wireless transmission. He says they plan to get rid of electric and go totally digital. We won't have radios. Already they're putting, you know how dimmer switches cause your radio to go all funky in your house?
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of this ended up destroying AM broadcast a long time ago. Yeah, I was talking about that. Sure, go ahead. But where are we going now?
Everything. But he says basically electricity is magnetism, and there's electrodynamic seismic forecasting that they can do, but they're not doing it. And we can create the free energy. I mean, this guy's amazing. I really encourage everybody that has any electrical or any, you know, interest in it to go to Eric P. Dollard, DOLLARD.com.
Okay. And all right, I'll have people check that out. They can check it out if they want to. The physicists are in agreement for the most part. Most physicists are in agreement that this whole talk of free energy or zero point energy is theoretically possible. And boy, wouldn't that be interesting to truly have the zero point energy? And then, hey, we really wouldn't matter much of anything, right? We wouldn't be arguing about solar plants and windmills and all the rest of it. I'd be okay with that.
It's all about the ether, and they took Ironside out of the equation. Like when they brought in Einstein and the theory of relativity, because the ether just screwed it up.
Okay. All right. Hey, appreciate the call there, Lucretia. Got a bunch online, okay, but I appreciate you calling. Let me go to line three. Hi, who's this? Go ahead. Hello?
Good morning. It's David in Phoenix.
Hi, David. What's on your mind?
Well, sticking with the theme of conspiracy.
Okay.
You've had really good guests on. It's been great.
Good.
I'm curious, how is it that on some scrub ground, if I'm a private, not BLM or Forest Service, but private property, due to our land use, I can't build an apartment complex, a trailer park, or a house, but I can put up a solar and a wind farm? I'm trying to understand how that works. And the second thing is that seems on the on the horizon is mining. We can't do some mining here in Jackson and Josephine counties where we have some nickel mines and some places that might be commercial grade ore, but they're tearing up over in southeastern Oregon over at McDermott. They're ripping that land up to get lithium for the solar batteries and stuff. So,
well, that's because it's all it's politically favored. All right. There's a couple of ways to look at this, though. Why? How is it that you can't build a house, but you can build a solar farm? I believe that there's an exception that that the legislature placed in land use, which more or less considers the solar farm the equivalent of farming. I mean, it's just a farm, just farming energy instead. But look at the bright side. Maybe Southern Oregon breaks free of Salem this way. You know, as it is right now, Salem still has fossil fuels or gasoline and diesel that they're able to work things. When they mandate that everything up there, especially in Portland and Salem, is going to be on electric vehicles, that means the National Guard will probably be electric vehicles too. And they're going to have to try to come, you know, take over Southern Oregon if we rebel and we want to leave. But then they're going to run out of gas. They're going to run out of juice at Eugene. Okay? All right.
All right. You give me some hope.
Yeah, I'll give you some hope. Then all of a sudden, of course, I was talking about that. What was it? The the electric generator for the tanks, the electric tank, you're driven by diesel fuel. So you think, why not just run it on diesel fuel? But okay. All right, let me go to line four. Hi, it's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Who's this? Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Tracy. This is Tracy in Borderville, California.
Hello, Tracy. What's on your mind?
Well, let's keep that energy theme going. First off, if you travel between Las Vegas and L.A., you'll see a large tower, that big shining tower with all these mirrors around it. That turns out to be an EPA fiasco, trying to generate solar energy using liquid sodium, I want to say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, yeah. I told you that I grew up, or that my first radio job was in Barstow. We had,
so you knew about it.
Yeah. We had one of those solar power plants. It was in Daggett, I think is where it was. And it was called Solar One. I still have like a commemorative paperweight, you know, from that sitting up there. But yeah, it was one of those things where they had the mirrors concentrating on the tower in the middle, right? And then there was liquid sodium that would heat up, and then it was used to generate steam for electrical generation back then. I think it's been discommissioned. I think it's all gone now, or decommissioned.
No, there's still one certainly out there on the interstate between Las Vegas and Barstow.
Oh, there is. Okay.
So, yes, it's still active. The dirty little secret, though, at night, you have to keep that sodium running, so you have to heat it with natural gas.
Okay. I love that. Yeah, that reminds me of the EV, the electrical vehicle, that at nighttime when it gets cold, it has to use its own power to stay alive, right? Okay.
You're right. So, yeah, we're turning a lot of farmland here in California into solar because you can't get water for it, so you might as well use something. So there's a lot of solar farms going up. We are on metered power here, time-sensitive, so that's what you're going to see up in Oregon in the future, where you have to do your laundry during the day because there's solar energy. California is a solar net energy producer during the day. They've got too much solar down here.
Yeah,
so,
too
that's
much.
The problem. So there is another solution I want to talk about. We do have – I've seen in Georgia. I drove across the Interstate 20 every couple days between Atlanta and Augusta, and it's could be implemented in the Northwest, although the Enviro guys would have some issues with it. And it's a series of reservoirs where during the peak demand period, you throw the water from one reservoir downward to generate through the generators. And then during low demand, you pump it up to the higher reservoir.
Oh, yeah.
So it is a storage battery.
Pumped hydro. Of course, there are losses in anything like that because you're not going to get all the energy back that you used from pumping the water up high. But yeah, that's better than losing it all, right?
Yeah, Georgia Power uses that. Lake Oconee is one of the places, and there are a few other lakes around there. And also, you would have the evaporation issue as well.
Oh.
But anyway, and you're blessed with geothermal there in Cape Falls, and I'm wondering why Oregon doesn't use more geothermal, but because it's the Cascades are marvelous for that stuff.
Well, maybe it's just because they don't really want the problem solved because it's much more profitable to be in on the grift on the solar and the windmill. Maybe that's it.
Yes. And one final point. He's very correct about foreign companies dominating the market. Siemens, which owns Gamesa, which is the Spanish windmill company, Siemens is a very big player in energy, in windmill energy, offshore especially.
All right.
And they really control much of the industry. And, you know, they're the ones who are making these multi-megawatt turbines. So that is the way it is today.
I'm going to be curious as to, as time goes on with these windmill farms, how many of the wildland birds will end up disappearing over time? What do you think?
You're right. Yeah, it's definitely a problem. And also that solar tower there in near Las Vegas, that fried a few birds and animals on its way, too.
Oh, that's right. In fact, I remember asking about that. I was a little Cub news reporter at that point. And I said, what happens if a bird flies through that beam? And he said, you don't want to be the bird flying through the beam, is what he told me. Yeah, so it's kind of like an old Looney Tune cartoon, right, where the flying turkey ends up being cooked.
Yeah, you go.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for the call, David. Great hearing from you from California, all right? Okay, it's now time for the Diner 62 Real American Quiz. Oh, lovely, lovely, lovely Diner 62. by the way, they delivered clam chowder. I'd never had their clam chowder last week. They delivered it. It was delicious. And I ate a whole cup. I ate a whole cup myself. Of course, that might have been a bowl. It was a pretty big cup. But remember, Friday, tomorrow, Clam Chowder Friday at Diner 62. Also, the crispy chicken sandwich. Mwah! Avocado, you can get it on all the burgers, omelets, salads, and some of the best taco salads in the valley, too, at Diner 62, just south of White City. 770-5633. We're going to be talking about a big day today in 1980. Get on it. We'll start with, come on. All I ask is that you have not won in the last 60 days. We'll play it next.
Freedom, prosperity, safety. These are some of the values that made Oregon great. Dr. Noah Robinson will work to preserve our treasured Oregon values.
As your state senator, I'll stand up to the Democrats and lobbyists in Salem, continuing the fight for your parental rights, promoting limited government, and protecting unborn lives.
Conservative, principled, independent. Vote Noah Robinson for Oregon Senate. Paid for by Noah Robinson for Oregon Senate. ID 23412.
The Earl of Sandwiches resides in the kitchen at Diner 62. Stop in for the royal treatment.
If you're remodeling your house, start with the foundation. Millett Construction offers a no-pressure, thorough inspection of your home's foundation and a no-obligation estimate if your house needs work. The foundation is most important because all of the repairs and upgrades you're planning, from the floors, windows, doors, cabinets, even the roof, can be affected if your foundation is unstable. Be sure you're on solid ground. Millett Construction will level your house and correct the shifting soil problem. Visit MillettConstruction.com.
Rev up your engines, folks. American Rentier Garage is putting on the brakes this season, ending the high cost of vehicle repairs with their exclusive offer. Discounted Oregon e-deal certificates good for a whopping $75 off any service. Whether it's a routine checkup, oil change, brake repair, or full-on engine overhaul, trust the expert technicians to get the job done right. Visit OregonEDeals.com to snag your discounted certificate. Drive in. Save big. American Rentier Garage, across from Elmer's on Biddle.
Hi, this is Lisa, the Hughes Lumber Girl, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
All right. By the way, Carol, call back. I'm sorry I hung up on you accidentally here, but it's the Diner 62 Real American Quiz, okay? And we're talking about a big day yesterday in 1980. Let's get to V. Hello, V. How you doing?
Hi, Bill. I'm doing fine. How are you?
All right. I'm doing pretty well, okay? It was April 24th, 1980. Ill-fated military operation to rescue the 52 American hostages held in Tehran ends. 8 U.S. servicemen died. No hostages rescued, okay? Now, the backstory, in case you've forgotten, it was a while back, right? November 4th of 79, the crisis started when militant Iranian students, outraged that the U.S. government had allowed the Shah to travel to the U.S. for medical treatment, he had been ousted, seized the U.S. embassy in Tehran. The Ayatollah Khomeini, you know, Iran's political and religious leader, took over the hostage situation, agreed to release some of the hostages. The remaining 52 captives remained at the mercy of the Ayatollah for the next 14 months. How many hostages, though, were initially released by the Ayatollah? Was it 5, 7, 11, 13, or 15?
I'll have to go with 7, number of the Lord.
You go, number of the Lord. Well, we're talking about the Ayatollah. Not this game.
No.
I'm sorry. Not this time. All right. Sorry. All right. Let me go to David. Hello, David. How many hostages initially released? Was it 5, 11, 13, or 15?
I'm going to say 5.
You're going to say 5. No, it was more than that. Let me go over to, let's see. We got Chris. Hello, Chris. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well.
Okay, so we have 5 and 7. Nope, it's either 11, 13, or 15. How many hostages were released by the Ayatollah at first?
13.
Was it 13? Yeah.
You're a winner!
You got it. A few weeks after that, November 17th, Khomeini ordered the release of 13 hostages. And what's really interesting about that, Chris, all women or African Americans, saying that these two groups were among people oppressed by the U.S. government and unlikely to be spies. But if you were a white male, hey, you were on the bubble there, okay? And it's so funny. He was taking it right out of, like, the Marxist who's the oppressed in the oppressor playbook. But, yeah, they did that. Now, another hostage who became gravely ill was released July 11th of 1980, producing the final number of 52 hostages. So you're going to go to Diner 62, all right? I appreciate that. Hang on, okay?
Okay.
Got to hang on. Got to get your address in. We're going to make sure that we have some good stuff for you, okay? Now then, I have about a minute to go, and then I'm going to turn into a pumpkin until tomorrow on Find Your Phone Friday. And I just have to give you the shot at winning another pair of these. We've been having such great fun the last few days talking. I don't know if it's fun. Some of the stuff's been pretty serious. Talking to people who are involved with the Josephine County Patriots Conference. I'll be one of the people there, too, along with just dozens of other speakers. It's going to be at the Josephine County Fairgrounds Floral Building. You can get all tickets and get all the information on jocogop.org, jocogop.org. But Holly has given me these amazing VIP tickets. They're worth $100 a piece. You get all sorts of access to the speakers, and you know, you just kind of walk through the place like you own it, you know, that kind of thing. And if you're a caller 16, like I said, these are very valuable. 770-563-3770-KMED. Caller 16 will get you this pair of VIP tickets. I'll have one more pair of VIP tickets tomorrow on Find Your Phone Friday. But right now, today, caller 16, and you win it right now, okay?
One of each. Forte VIN 770-783 MSRP 21645 3500 due. Sol VIN 235213 MSRP 22210 3500 due. 10K miles per year. Zero security deposit. All incentives and discounts to dealer plus tax, title, license. 150 registration processing fee. Trading in a vehicle will not eliminate your debt. Negative equity applied to new loan balance. Ends 4/30/24.
Making payments on a car you don't want to drive anymore? You need Kia Medford's Payment Wipeout. We're wiping out all the payments you have left on your old car so you can drive a new Kia, like a new 2024 Kia Forte LXS or a new 2024 Kia Soul LX. Just $149 a month lease, both for 24 months. Plus, once we make a deal at Kia Medford, we'll pay off your trade no matter how much you owe. Need credit? Go to KiaMedford.com to get pre-approved in less than 30 seconds with no effect on your credit score. Get into a new Kia, like Fortes or Souls. Your choice, just $149 a month during the payment wipeout at Kia Medford. Click KiaMedford.com.
This is Bi-Coastal Media's KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point, Medford, and KCMD Grants Pass.
It's 9 o'clock at KMED.